1039 LI News Radio. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and listen live 24/7 at linewsradio.com.
It is now time for the crime report, being sponsored by the Sylvan County Crime Stoppers. 1-800-220-TIPS. As always, all calls to be kept anonymous and a monetary reward issued for information leading to an arrest. Joe Jacklin, retired NYPD sergeant, is former commanding officer of the Bronx Cold Case Squad, current adjunct professor at John Jay College, and, of course, author of the bestseller called The Criminal Investigative Function, A Guide for New Investigators, edition number 3. Joseph, how are you, sir?
Good, Jay. How are you?
I am well. And, of course, the week continues, and the main topic of discussion, Joe, is gun control, and it seems like our national leaders can't get it together with something definitive, nor our local leaders, which I'll talk about in a second. But at least what I like seeing here is the public sector getting involved as far as making decisions. The schools being a portion of that, and you talk about a Miller Place a school, in essence. You talk about pretty much a lot of the other schools. We had a couple of superintendents on this week, Joe, and many now are certainly heeding the precautions.
Well, I mean, it's like, yeah, welcome to the party, pal, right? That's basically what we've been saying all along. I mean, they should have been planning for this ever since Columbine. I mean, the rash of school shootings that we've had has just been enormous, and it's just something that, there are things that we could do to mitigate it. Can we ever fix it? I hope we can, but, you know, hope is never a plan when you're dealing with this stuff, so we have to get out there. We got to start making decisions. And it starts with our politicians. I mean, it's great that the public is involved, but you know what? The public might have to go to the voting booth and make big changes if the current crew of politicians can't get it done. Something needs to be done. You know, you and I have spoken about this ad nauseum, and it's just, you just kind of scratch your head about how nothing ever gets done.
And what a poor message it sends to Joe. You know, we had on Senator Michael Giannaris of the 12th District yesterday, and, you know, four Republican senators walked out before a big vote. And, you know, you're talking about background checks. You know, you're talking about extending the time for which a firearm can be obtained without a background check from the current 3 days to 10 that's being proposed. And you have other proposals out there that would enable courts to remove firearms from people judged to be a danger to themselves or others. You know, you have the banning of bump stocks and maybe establishing a firearm violence research institute to study gun crime as a public health issue. You know, these are kind of no-brainers when you read it, yet because of, you know, the bickering back and forth, the partisan nonsense that we see all over the country trickling down to our local levels, this is why we cannot get anything done.
Yeah, it's like paralysis by analysis, though, at this point. You know, the issue that comes down to is that there are certain simple things that we can do. I don't see how, extending the waiting period from 3 days to 10 days really is an infringement of gun rights. I don't see it. I understand Second Amendment, and I support people who want to have guns. Just the problem is, I think mostly even lawful gun owners say that, you know what, there's something needs to be done, especially with the mental health issue. I mean, there's got to be some common sense type of, legislation going on or even discussion. But, I mean, if you follow the discussion that goes on in social media about this, I mean, it's violent all in itself from both sides. Really, it's a shame that we have to even be, you know, fighting over something that seems to be pretty simple. Something needs to be done. I mean, you can't keep on having these mass shootings.
Joe, you know, the mental illness stuff, this is the big loophole here that has to be sewn up because, you know, the common understanding is that any history of illness, mental illness, stops gun sales. And, yes, you know, when you think about it, in reality, it's just not the case. If you look at the current Florida and federal law, this is the problem here. listing two specific criteria for entering people in an OBI federal database used for background checks. One, you have to have been involuntarily committed to a mental health facility. And two, you must be under a court order, which could include having been found not guilty due to insanity. Now, you know, the problem is, Joe, anything less, including voluntarily committing yourself for treatment, usually won't show up in these background checks nationally and and halt gun sales. It's just not going to happen. And, you know, the crazy thing is, you think we would have learned our lesson, as you said, but just a few states have raised the standards, though, including the temporary gun prohibitions for people voluntarily admitted for treatment. You know, this is what we talk about all the time as far as we can't seem to get together and solidifying some legislation when it comes to this stuff.
No, I mean, it's just both parties, you know, solidifying their bases. I mean, the Republicans are saying, you know, they're sticking with, you know, basically not doing anything so they can keep the gun control advocates. And then the Democrats are solidifying their base, who've been anti-gun all along. So, you know, after a while, you're kind of saying, you know, we're so split down the middle that it's actually frightening that we can't get anything done. Because that certain things can be common sense without infringing on people's rights to bear arms. I mean, I'm all for that. Let's come to the table and let's talk civilly. It's not a civil conversation. It's very you know, it's violent, actually, the conversations about this stuff. So until people can just calm down and be able to talk about this like adults and not yell and scream at one another and call people names and this and that, I don't think we get anything done. This is like you know, kindergarten 101.
And that's what it is, and that's what I stated. You know, the public sector getting involved, talking about the retailers, Dick's Sporting Goods will ban the assault rifles, Walmart raising the age. I know others have gotten involved, Kroger, L.L. Bean. They're not going to sell firearms to under 21 age individuals. Kroger, L.L. Bean becoming the latest here out west. I know Fred Meyer stores out in the Oregon area. Listen, a lot of people are going to get involved here because our public officials cannot get it done, and it's really a shame.
Well, I understand that, and I understand what Dick's has done and a lot of other places. But, I mean, if you look back at some of the incidents that we had, the shooter got the gun unlawfully, you know. So, I mean, if you look at even Sandy Hook shooting, the mother bought him the gun. I mean, this is, you know, so, I mean, it doesn't really matter what the age is. If you have a gun in the home and you have a child who has some mental issues, this is another issue. So when does it come down? You know, where do you start and where do you stop? The guy who shot all the people in the church, I mean, there wasn't entered into a database. He was over 21 years of age. It didn't matter. So yeah, coming up with ages, whatever. To me, that's just like you know, saying like we did something. You know, patting himself on the back. Well, we're not going to sell these guns, so pat yourself on the back. Well, there's a whole entire black market out there. I mean, it's just there needs to be some law enforcement angles that need to be done to do this. And you know what, though, Jay? What happens? What's the process about lawful gun owners when they become too old or when they pass away? Where do those guns end up? This was something in the police department that we used to get these forms, and we used to go around and try to collect the guns when a lawful gun owner has died, but many times you'd find out that the whole family moved, they emptied out the entire house, these guns go missing forever. So that's another thing that nobody talks about. That's talk about another loophole in the system about how these guns end up in the wrong hands.
Yeah, you're right. We could spend an hour on this stuff, no question about it, talking with Joe Jacklin, of course, the crime reporter. Let's move on, Joe. The 59 arrests, heroin charges in Nassau, four alleged dealers there, part of a crackdown this past week. In the what seems to be the hot spot now, according to the map of what was developed in Nassau, Massive Pequa, the community especially hard hit by the by this epidemic there. So, well done, 59 arrests, and the newly official appointed commissioner there, Patrick Ryder, making a big splash.
Well, yes, and also if you remember, a couple of weeks ago we had that shooting in Massapequa with the marijuana dealer and stuff like that. So there's something going on in Massapequa, and it's a very affluent part of Nassau County too. So it's really an eyebrow raiser what's going on in Massapequa. I mean, between the heroin, the marijuana dealers getting shot, and you know, and there was a robbery that they had in a diner, too, within the same week. I mean, Mets people really had a bad week.
They really are. And the map, with all the technology that was designated over there in Nassau, seems to be doing the job.
Well, you have places like Freeport that brought in the camera system, the license plate readers. We heard talk about Central Islip, remember, with the gang stuff, about putting them in it. We didn't really have anything definitive, which might be a good thing because we don't want to tell everybody that, you know, where these cameras are. But, you know, those license plate readers and video cameras that they put up are a deterrent for crime and also help the law enforcement agents be able to identify those who are responsible after the fact. So, you know what? It's good. I mean, the crime control advocates will say this is great because it will reduce crime. And then we have the civil libertarians that say, you know, it's an invasion of privacy and this and that. And my argument is always you have no right to privacy in public, period, end of point. As long as they're not peeking through your windows in your house and video or taping, you have zero right to privacy in public. I don't know when people are going to understand that.
No question. Joe Jacklone, you listen to It's the Crime Report. Well, the mother of Brentwood teen Joe allegedly slain by the MS-13 gang members making a plea yesterday. And she's right, you know, better school programs to help out, really keeping a watchful eye on our youth and making sure they're involved and whatnot in activities. And listen, it's an obvious no-brainer here.
Well, yes, and it also there's a one element missing there too is you know, parenting. You know, that was one of the things that was missing from the laundry list of things that she listed. But parenting is up there, number one, right? I mean, we need to make sure that our kids are behaving well and making sure that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. But, you know, we can't start. You know, the only thing I don't like about it, Jay, is that we keep on, like, it's like the nanny state thing, right? We keep on making other people and schools and everybody else responsible for your kids. It just doesn't work out that way. You know what? It starts at home, you know, keeping the family together, doing family stuff, keeping kids on the right track. I know things still sometimes go awry, but we can't throw this all on the schools and basically the taxpayers, because who else is going to pay for this? All these after-school programs and the teachers and that you have to hire and the administrators and everybody else to run these things. You know, we like to throw these things out there and say, oh, yeah, this will fix the problem. But then when you get the bill for it, people are going to go into panic mode.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Jobu Jacklone with us, Crime Report. Let's move up to some of the corruptive practices of our politicians and aides, and talking about Joe Prococo with closing arguments. You know, it's interesting how a term can kind of signify something. Talking about Ziti and the Sopranos, Joe, I spoke earlier about this earlier in the week regarding Joe Prococo. And you know what? It's a term that could really trigger something as far as jurors are concerned. You know, the Prococo thing, I got to tell you, I don't know if it bodes well for him.
No, I don't think so. I mean, when you just listen to what's going on, like I said, and this guy is was, you know, one of the governor's top aides, so it's got to be a little disheartening up in Albany, too, or, you know, listening to what's been transpiring. I'm sure the governor is getting a daily update about what transpires in the courtroom. And I wouldn't be surprised if he had somebody that worked for him inside the courtroom listening to what's going on. This is, you know, just another instance of, you know, corruption in New York politics. And unfortunately, we become immune to it. And we just kind of, it's almost like becomes acceptable. Like, oh, okay, yeah, just another politician doing something. I mean, when do people say this is enough's enough already? And, you know, and then people want to know how, you know, Donald Trump becomes elected president. Well, people get tired with career politicians. They just get, and they say, what else do we have to lose? Right? Let's just try something. Like I said, for anybody out there listening who wants to run for, you know, political office, I think this is your next couple of years. I think people are just tired with the establishment.
It's a good point, really is. And exactly the reason of who's in the White House right now. As far as the Mangano trial, you know, everything that has come his way has turned up empty as far as his defense team is concerned. So that trial is going to be coming fast and furious a week from Monday. You know, the latest, which we've discussed, the Rob Walker, former aide, and the $5,000 he got from a contractor, although try to give it back. And, of course, tickets to Notre Dame football in South Bend. You know, that doesn't bode well at all for this entire case.
No, I mean, if you remember when you were kids, right, no backseat. Once you're a public servant and you take, basically, you take a bribe or it's bribe receiving. I mean, you take an unlawful gratuity, whatever you want to call it. There's no giving it back like, oh, okay, you know, it was a mistake. Once, according to the penal law, once the public servant accepts it and takes it, it's a done deal. Doesn't matter if he gives it back or not. So, you know, that's just you know, the way the law is written. And I don't think he's going to have any type of sway in that just because you gave it back. Nothing's forgiven at that point. And, you know, I mean, this is where there was also some, you know, one of the things in the trial, they said that they can't mention anything about anything that happens with New York City, which is an interesting aspect because apparently there is something going on between Venditto and Mangano and New York City, whether it's the mayor or any of somebody else, but there's not a lot of talk about it. I don't know if you heard that. So it's just interesting to see how far this guy Singh really got involved in New York politics, how deeply rooted he got himself in.
Well, listen, Singh has been singing like a tenor as far as the last few months are concerned. So it's interesting, the caveat in all of this is the mayor himself, Bill de Blasio, and what kind of dealings he actually had with this guy.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, he has a restaurant in Queens there that's been the center of this. The mayor's refused to answer any questions about it. Go figure on that one. But, you know, listen, I don't know when politicians and cops and other civil servants, when they're going to learn that the first person that they're going to roll over on is you. So you're never going to get out from under this thing. So, you know, if you stay into this business of, you know, taking bribes and, you know, unlawful gratuities and trips, and you just saw the former NYPD inspector, right? He just pled guilty to all those things. Remember, this was the plane with the prostitutes and the Super Bowl tickets and everything. That guy rolled over on him quick, too. I mean, listen, these guys know that if they get the cops or the politicians in their pockets, all they have to do is, if they get caught, is turn over state's evidence on the politicians or the police or whatever civil servant they have. And basically, it's a get-out-of-jail-free card. I mean, when are people going to learn that, Jay? I don't understand that concept. Like, how do you think you're going to get away with it?
You can't, and they never will learn. Talking with Joe, a couple of minutes left, the crime report. You know, speaking of all this, you know, I like what the county executive did in Nassau, really throwing the hammer down. We had her on earlier in the week, Joe, on Tuesday, and it's, you know, listen, you can't even have a cup of coffee. If you accept it, there's going to be consequences. That's what you have to do these days, you know, as far as, you know, people talking to others, as far as, you know, getting these contracts through the legislature. You know, they're going to have somebody watching that whole situation, but it's just not going to be tolerated. It's a zero tolerance policy. And I'm hoping that sets a precedent all throughout the landscape.
It's about time is the only thing I can say about that, Jake. It's about time. I mean, this always seems to be like the two sets of rules, one for the politicians and the people on the inside, and then the rest of us. I mean, and we always get stuck with the bill. That's basically what transpires here. So, you know, it's about time. I mean, I've been listening to the current county executive, and I like, you know, where she's saying that. I'd like to see even a little more vocal than she is. You know, there's a lot of problems in Nassau, and of course, there's a lot of problems in Suffolk, and I want to see our politicians step up to the plate.
Have to right now, because it's become a focal point as far as the elections are concerned. I think people, this is one of the biggest categories out there. People are just tired of what they are seeing and hearing, and it's about time our leaders, you know, kind of throw down the gauntlet here. No question about it. Let's move over to this this former East Hampton guy who was brought back to the island, 19 years, Joe, after fleeing the country, facing a charge of killing his best friend in a drunken driving crash. Talking about this Wilson Panison, who pled not guilty to an indictment charging him with manslaughter and others, going back to 1999, that crash.
Right, and you know what, you know, it's not a shock that somebody pleads not guilty at arraignment, but you know what? If they've been looking for this guy for this long and they finally brought him back, I mean, they have a nice, rock-solid case on him, because you just don't spend all this money pulling somebody back into New York by not having, you know, basically a rock-solid case. So he's going to have a difficult time. But you know what? Drunk driving, as you know, we don't treat it as harshly as we should. So it's just going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
No question, especially when he had a blood alcohol content of 0.20. And think about it, twice the legal threshold of 0.10 since lowered to 0.08.
Then.
Yeah, incredible.
Right, like I said, so now he would be even almost triple.
Joe, a lot on the plate, and we will get back to you next week.
You got it. Have a great weekend, Jake.